Yo, what's going on, friend? You're about to hear a sponsorship coaching call that I did with my buddy Josh Hall, who teaches web designers how to build profitable businesses. Josh reached out after reading my book Sponsor Magnet and landing his first five-figure sponsorship deal without even really trying that hard. And so in this session, you'll learn why rigid sponsorship packages are costing you a ton of money, how to turn your existing affiliate relationships into six-figure sponsor deals, why asking about budget ranges, not just the budget, changes everything in negotiations, and the exact due diligence process that protects your reputation when vetting new sponsors. If web designers with 50 clients can land sponsorships, so can you, no matter what industry you're in.
Justin Moore, high time we did a one-on-one together, man. It is so, I feel, it doesn't seem right to say so good to meet you because I feel like I already know you.
Well, I feel like we were destined to meet, especially since you randomly dropped into my DMs one day like, hey, dude, Justin, thanks. You just made me five figures in sponsorships for my in-person event. I was like, oh, awesome. I didn't even know what I did, but glad to hear it. And so, yeah, man, it sounds like you're wanting to focus a bit more on sponsorships, given how easy that one was to land, right?
Well, I want to thank you for the book, Sponsor Magnet, which I'm holding right here, which one of my kiddos is torn up on the back. How rude. But yeah, man. And actually, it was funny. Like, I really just got going with the book. And then, interestingly enough, I think I learned quite a bit from you, and we have a mutual friend in Jay Klaus, with a lot of your guys' conversations. And I think those planted the seed of, like, I feel like I'm sitting on literal gold. Because I'm in a position where I'm getting hit up by so many companies and brands now about sponsorship. And it's just a world that I didn't know anything about and I wasn't really interested in, but I think what's happened is, and we'll kind of, I think we'll use this as a bit of a coaching call, but also for my audience of web designers. But what happens is I think you get to a certain point at an entrepreneur where the opportunities are coming in and it's either like a quick no and you just vet them out, or it's like, you know what, maybe, depending on, especially when it comes to, you know, opening up different revenue streams. So I think that's what piqued my interest last year and then why I got into it and subsequently why I'm glad I got into your world, man.
Yeah, no, 100%. So to kick things off, like, give me a bit of an understanding about like how your revenue stream breakdown looks like today. Like, where is the bulk of your revenue coming from? Is sponsorships kind of like treated like found money right now? Is it something that you rely on and, you know, in terms of operations? Like, just kind of curious about your team and like how it's all structured.
So think of me as the Jay Klaus of web design.
Okay.
Bulk of my money is my community, Web Designer Pro, which is basically like the lab for web designers. I do have other revenue streams with affiliate money, which is basically just me recommending tools. Circle is my largest affiliate now. So I have some YouTube videos that talk about Circle and my affiliate link. I have some other tools I use that have really become partners in a way, just because I am, and I think this gets into a sponsorship strategy. I am fiercely loyal and I am not interested as far as a sponsorship strategy and just taking a bunch of sponsors and doing little low campaigns. I'm also at the place where, like, if I'm going to dedicate any new wing of revenue, it better be six figures or close to. Like, it's just, I can launch another course and build my membership up to, you know, account for six figures. So those are things that held me back as well. But I've realized, like, I've been using some of these tools in my tool stack for 10 years, and I still love them today, and I'm very loyal to them. So I've worked with a few of those tools to this point, and my next foray is to really, like, look at what that may look like as far as, you know, more like a partnership type of thing. So that's kind of the mindset. And I do have some consulting and a couple other smaller revenue streams, but it's primarily my courses, community and coaching through Web Designer Pro, and then affiliates and sponsors have actually become actually number two now. So,
wow. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So this is growing now. Okay. So I want to first, question something that you said.
Okay.
And it's that I don't ever want to pursue a revenue stream unless I'm going to be able to get it to six figures. And from a business standpoint, like, sure, I get that logic. Like maybe you would have a better use of your time focusing on growing your membership community or some other revenue stream or something like that. And I get that at face value. My philosophy has always been, especially with respect to sponsorships, that it's not about you. It's not about how much money you're going to make. It's about, am I most capably serving my audience and my customers? And so the reason that I think that this is important is that let's just pretend that you had zero in sponsorship revenue. There's a temptation to focus 100% of your ad slots in your podcast and your YouTube channel and all that, talking about your own thing, your own products, right? Your community, your courses and all that stuff too. Because logically it makes sense, right? Like I keep 100% of that. So why would I want to talk about anything else? But my philosophy is that it's actually quite myopic as a business owner to think that the only way in which I can solve my audiences or my customers' problems is with the products that I directly sell personally. There's actually challenges that they're experiencing that I probably need to solve, but I'm never going to create a product or a part of my course or a part of my membership that addresses that. So for example, let's say that you do a survey of your web design audience and you say, hey, tell me what's going on in your life. What's keeping you up at night? What are the problems that you're having? You may have done some of this psychographic research to design your own products and courses and stuff already. But like they're probably going to come back to you with stuff that's all over the map. And frankly, probably stuff that's not related to web design. It's like work-life balance, right? I'm like a freelancer and I'm working all the time and I don't have the stability and, you know, health insurance and managing my money and incorporating. And do I need that? Like all these other kind of complex challenges. And of course, you may have some modules and stuff in your course community that addresses some of these things. But frankly, managing your money as a solopreneur, is that really a software that you're going to create? And they say that that's a big giant issue for them. So my philosophy is like, okay, let's go actually out there and survey, more deeply survey our audience and uncover voids that's of challenges that are happening in their life where you now realize like, okay, let me dump this all into ChatGPT and say, what are the challenges that they're experiencing? I should go out and proactively reach out to, you know, FreshBooks or some, you know, bookkeeping tool that seems like could probably solve this issue that that 35% of my audience is experiencing. And so the buried lead here, I think, in this kind of philosophical explanation is that I actually think when you lead with service, when you say, how can I, yes, serve my audience with my own products, but there's probably other sponsors, other brands, other companies that have software tools, products, and things like that, that could make my audience's life measurably better. And the buried lead is that I actually think you'll make more money in the end with this approach.
I do like that challenge, Justin, in that frame of sponsors being of service and solving some sort of problem or filling a gap. I definitely like that. I will take that to heart. I think the thought of like the six-figure thing is opportunity cost. And I just know how even my experience so far, which has been overall very positive with sponsors, I just know like how much time goes back and forth often. And some of that can be alleviated with a nice guide, with a book called Sponsor Magnet. But I think that's the part of that too, is just like, I feel like if I do this for a solid year, it's going to, you know, make a dent in what I can push out with my content and stuff. However, to your point, this brings me to a question I wanted to ask at some point. So perfect segue. What is the difference between an affiliate and a sponsor? And I ask this because I have been doing this unintentionally for a long time. I have affiliate partners who have tools that are adjacent to me and stuff that like, I don't cover that. Or for example, my world of websites, one thing that's really popular is a website in a day offer or a website in a week offer. It's not really something I teach, but I have a couple colleagues who I'm affiliates for who have programs for that. So I view them as an affiliate, but not a sponsor. So I want to throw it to you. Like, what is the difference between an affiliate and a sponsor? And if you want to throw in what a partner is, I'd love to hear, you know. What
are So you've hit on my three-legged stool that I describe, which is your PSA, your products, the things that you directly sell, like your course, your community, things like that. Sponsors, which is other brands and companies, tools and things like that. And then alliances, that's the A. So the thing you just described is a friend who has a, you know, website in a day training or accelerator or something like that. And this dovetails very nicely to what I was just describing, which is that you should be equally promoting all of these things because it's all about what is going on in my audience slash customer's life and which thing can I plug in at which ad slot based on what I know is going on in their universe. So from my perspective, the difference between a sponsor and an alliance, well, or an affiliate, a lot of people think of it as like a payment structure thing, right? Like a sponsor will often pay you a flat amount, you know, to $10,000 or whatever to do a couple of YouTube integrations for them or whatever the scope is. And then an affiliate is someone who only pays you based on a result or an outcome, right? Like a sale or a lead driven or, you know, something like that. But I actually think that's not the right framing. I think it's because a sponsor can compensate you in a hybrid fashion, you know, too, where maybe there's some sort of base upfront compensation to, you know, reward you for actually generating the content containing the promotion. And then there's some sort of back end kicker or incentive where, hey, you know, and so $5,000 and for every, you know, lead you drive, that's an additional $100 or something like that. So I think a better framing is this idea of like product sponsors and alliances. And by the way, an alliance where you're recommending a friend, maybe you don't even make money on that. Maybe you're just, you're putting their offer in front of your audience because it's great. They may not even have an affiliate program. It's not about making money. It's about serving your audience and your customers. So I think the compensation structure comes down to like the other thing too, that I think is really important part of this discussion is like, if there is no win present for your audience, if you were to put this offer in front of them, regardless of what type of offer it is, then you have to engineer one, which means potentially changing the financial dynamics of the deal in your favor. So like if you're, again, going back to that hybrid deal, if the brand says, hey, we'll pay you, you know, a couple grand plus 30% commission, but there's really no promo code for your audience or there's no seasonal promotion, there's no real incentive for them, you might consider going back to them and being like, hey, I'm actually okay taking 15%. As the backend kicker, if we can pass along a 15% discount code to my audience. So now you look amazing to the sponsor because it's like, how can I make sure that we're all aligned so everyone wins here? So again, I think it's just thinking a bit more deeply than how much am I going to get paid?
So I imagine folks who are in the alliance category as like referral partners would be straddling the sponsorship leg of the chair,
yeah,
at times, right? Like they may be a sponsor,
correct,
for 3 months or 6 months, and then they're just back to alliance. Then maybe next year they're back in the sponsorship leg. Is that right?
100%. Like I just got, I'm going to release an episode on my podcast, the Sponsor Magnet podcast, soon, where I am sponsoring another creator's in-person event soon. Mm. It's the first time that I've done this. I've sponsored some newsletters and stuff in the past, but like now I am, you know, someone came to me and solicited this. And so they have shared my course and things like that in their newsletter before, but now they came to me and they said, hey, will you sponsor our event? So like you said, I think it just kind of depends on what's going on and how you can support each other.
How ironic. The sponsee has become the sponsor. Wrote the exactly. book on it and then you had to pay and then you became a sponsor.
You know what the funny thing is like the intro, the little sizzle reel of the podcast was my mentee was like, I feel like we're just matrixing out of the way of each other's sponsorship tactics.
Real quick before we dive further into my scenario here, Justin.
Yeah.
As you know, I serve website designers, a lot of freelancers, a lot of solopreneurs, but also a lot of agency owners who have been in this game for 20 years. And they're using tools that are trusted by their clients and that other partners are using. Do you feel like the realization that I had of like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting on gold. Do you think web designers specifically and creators, designers, brand designers, marketers are also sleeping on a potential sponsorship opportunity for their business?
Let me answer this question by telling you a quick story, because I think that a lot of people listening might be thinking, okay, this doesn't really apply to me. I haven't really built up an audience on the internet or something, and I don't have followers or a large reach. So like, why would a brand or a company ever want to like compensate me? I moved from California to Minnesota about a year ago, and I hired a handyman to do a bunch of work for us kind of around the house, hang pictures and do some minor renovations and all that. And we were, this was October, so we were preparing for the winter. And I remember asking him, I was like, oh man, I got to get my my gutters cleaned out because I have all these leaves and I don't want to snow and freeze and the whole thing, right? And so I was looking at getting like kind of the traps that goes over the gutters, right? And my handyman was like, oh, there's only one company that you need to call. I've been doing this. I've been in this, you know, area for 30 years. They're local. They're amazing. Great customer service. You know what I did, Josh? I called up this company. I didn't look on Google. I didn't look on Trustpilot. I didn't do anything. I called this one company up. They came out. They gave an estimate for five figures to put these dang gutter guards on my gutters. And I seriously considered doing it. And guess what? It was based on the recommendation of one person. And so I challenge you, anyone like thinking that they do not have influence, your influence does not need to be massive scale. You might be an agency owner. You might be you might have a group of peers who really trust your recommendation. And it might be 10 people, it might be 15 people, but those people, the LTV of that customer that you refer could be 4, 5, 6 figures, depending on what you're actually recommending, right? And so again, I think it's very important to realize that like word of mouth is the original influence, right? And so that you can absolutely strike deals that are financially lucrative.
So one strategy that I teach my students is to build referral partners. It's one huge way that I grew my web design agency was to have referral partners who were like photographers, videographers, people who were ancillary to what I was doing. So unintentionally here as well, I was growing my alliance, but I never thought about it in the context of a sponsor. So what would be a way that web designers could take their referral partners and alliances and make them more of a sponsor? Is it like featuring in their newsletter? Is it like,
yeah,
a link in their toolkit that they, you know, like what
would be, it would be something as simple as going to your top photographer or your top videographer and saying, and they're based in, you know, Ohio, and you say, hey, I have 600 people within 25 miles of, Cincinnati or whatever. Would you like me to do a targeted, dedicated blast about your services to this segment of my list? It's going to be $1,200 or whatever it's going to be. It's a sponsorship. You're sponsoring me doing a blast, but I'm going to drum up business for you. What do you say? So obviously that's a geo-targeted or a hyper-local approach, but you could do if you have partners who are geographically independent and they don't need to go, maybe there's, you know, they can do digital services for them. You could do something similar. You can identify a high value segment of your newsletter or your email list that you could send that offer to, or maybe it's the whole email list. Who knows if the offer makes sense. But yeah, you can easily turn referral partners into sponsors by showing them how it's an obvious win for them.
Is it common to offer like a paid workshop? Like, let's say I have, 30 some clients and it's pretty modest, but I'm in a networking group. And what if I were to have one of my referral partners pay to basically do a workshop to just get in front of my customers and my network?
I mean, I would seriously consider if you came to me, bro, and you were like, hey, Justin, do you want to get in front of, I don't know, X hundred, a high value web design businesses, people who have, maybe built, moderate audiences, like, what do you say? It's going to be $100,000. The calculus in my head is going to be probably twofold. This is what I teach in the book, right? It's like I have three goals, right? I as a sponsor would have three goals if you came to me with that proposal. Is this an awareness play? Like, do I just want people to learn about my book, right? Like they know about me, learn about me, watch my YouTube videos, listen to my podcasts, more of an awareness thing. Repurposing. Am I going to get assets that I could potentially turn around and put on my podcast? Maybe I hire a videographer in the room and they could film me and I look cool in front of with the mic in front of my hand in front of, 50 people. Like I could turn that into shorts, or I could, put newsletters out about that. Like that's a repurposing strategy, content play. Or is it conversion? Am I looking to get coaching clients? Like if I pay you $2,000, am I going to get at least one coaching client from the whatever 30 or 50 people that are in the room? I don't know. That's where my mind is going to be. And so that's the same conversation that you should have with someone that you're trying to propose this to. And again, they may not be savvy enough to understand this is how they should think about it, but that's your job. That's your job. And to kind of walk them through the process, like tell me about your goals. What would be exciting as an outcome if you were to teach this event? And then you just kind of walk them through the process and then put a a menu of options in front of them that'll get them excited.
What about the term partner? Is that basically straddling in between alliance and sponsor? Maybe,
you know, I think
product, if you're, you know, recommending their product. Or
yeah. I mean, I think that,
and I just ask that because I see brand partner so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that a lot of people use these words interchangeably, right? Okay. It's like, this was a, I'm partnering with brand. That could mean a lot of things. It could mean, you know, I was sponsored by them. They actually paid me money, or, you know, I'm getting an affiliate commission, or maybe they're not even giving me anything. It's just that, like, I am now aligned with them and, you know, we're going to do some collaborations or something. So I think it's, rather than getting fixated on particular terminology, I think it's more helpful to think about what type of group you're actually promoting.
Okay, cool. So partner is basically like an umbrella term for all the above.
The subtitle of my book is How to Attract, Price, and Execute Your Dream Brand Partnerships. So I do think of it as like an umbrella, like you're partnering with this brand and exactly how you're compensated depends.
Cool. You mentioned ad slots, that terminology earlier, and this is what has tripped me up when in thinking of like how custom I would want to get, because I do feel like all brands have their, and I've just learned this so far and dipping my toe into these worlds, like they have an agenda and some ideas as well. But I also am careful not to make myself like a fractional marketer for a brand. So tell me, like, how, I guess we'll go back into coaching mode here. How rigid should I be with my offers as like an ad slot, like, you know, podcast ads, certain types of content? What do you see? What do you see that helps people in my situation where they're like, I basically don't want to be like a part-time marketer for a company.
Yeah.
But I also want to give a little bit of room for them to, like, you know, enter my world in a way that works for them.
I just have a very simplistic answer, or fairly simplistic answer, which is that by eliminating fixed deliverable packages, so you know, this is how I always do it. You want to work with me? Here's what I'm going to give you. By getting rid of that approach, you will make 10 times more money. Mm. I'm not exaggerating. Easily 10 times more money with bespoke custom packages that you provide every brand. What this means, though, is there's a trade-off, which is there's a heavier operational load, right? Which is that there's more coordination required. There's more, finagling that's going to be required in terms of which ad slot goes where. And this brand gets, you know, this type of deliverables, and this brand's going to do newsletter blasts. This brand's going to do stuff on the YouTube channel. This brand's going to come in and do a guest session in the private community. Like, where my logic is that, it's like going to the doctor. You have some sort of ailment, right? You walk in, and you're in the waiting room waiting for them. They come in, you open your mouth to tell them what your symptoms are, and they go, shh. They just take out a prescription pad, write a random prescription, hand it to you, and leave. That's what you're doing by forcing brands to pick package 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 without ever consulting them about what their challenges are. And so what I'm not saying is that you need to like come up with some brilliant set of deliverables that's never been done before to every brand. You may have some kind of prefix rough packages that you kind of keep close to your chest that you know, like, okay, yeah, most brands are going to want the YouTube video and want the newsletter and want this and this type of thing. But like, you should be very willing to like take out a deliverable out of a package if they have not expressed interest at all. Mm-hmm. The other advantage of this, Josh, is that you're not doing extra work that the brand might not even care about. A lot of times creators have this like, okay, the Instagram post and the podcast and the YouTube, and it's like package one, and it's all that. And the brand's like, okay, I guess package one, when they don't even care about some of that stuff. They don't even care about YouTube or the social posts or whatever. They just really are most excited about the newsletter or sponsoring your in-person event or whatever. And so that's why having this conversation prior to providing them a proposal allows you to lightly customize it so that they can get really excited.
So you may have rough packages that could be more internal facing, and then you yep. customize it based off of where the sponsor's interest is. It is interesting because I've had a couple sponsors. One was not interested in podcasts at all. They're all about the newsletter. One was actually not really too worried about the newsletter. They're all about the podcast. So it is kind of, it's interesting that, yeah, like those packages may differ.
Well, and you know, there's all these like random reasons that a brand could not be interested in a certain distribution channel that you have that you would have never known about had you not asked them. So, for example, if you recall when the last time that TikTok was going to be potentially banned, there were a lot of brands that I was working with and consulting my clients that we're working with, and that the brand just decided we're not touching TikTok until we figure out what's happening, because we don't want to contract any deliverables on there. If, you know, by the time it's about to go live, that platform's gone and the creators that we like paid to like publish there are not able to do so. And so like they, you know, there are some brands who just have this like, you know, random rule internally that like, hey, we're not going to touch that platform for the following reason. And so you may not really understand that. But if you never have a conversation with them about what's important, what are the do's and don'ts, what are the gotchas of like things that have been challenging with recent partnerships, you'd never know it.
All right, I'm taking some notes here. So if you see me looking at my screen, I'm dropping some of the highlights here that I'm going to be taking to heart. Let's just talk about money, man. This is what, I mean, as you point out in the book, it's like somebody asking how much does a house cost? It's like, well, let's talk about all the variables. I feel like sponsorships are the same thing. So with this idea of having like rough packages, the cost with those, you do have a bit of a formula in the book. So I'm going to pretend like I haven't read that yet, but is it worth having a goal on our end for like for me, if I'm thinking six figures, would it be worth having that idea of 100,000 at least and then structuring rough packages to make sure I hit that within each quarter? Or do you tell me think bigger, or do we base it off the client? Do we ask about pricing? Tell me about the money side of this.
So, obviously having goals is a good thing and you can back into some numbers and all that. But that also potentially limits your upside. If you're thinking, okay, I want to do one sponsorship a month and 100 grand, whatever, let's just say 10 grand. I'd like to get 10 grand a month in sponsorships. What if there's a brand out there willing to pay you 100,000 for a single deal for 2 months of deliverables because they have this massive AI feature that's rolling out? It's huge priority for them. And you're over here sitting like, I'm fine, happy with 10K, you know, this type of thing. And so I really do encourage people to think big. That's a big part of this, is realize that the top end, you could absolutely blow the ceiling off of your goal when you find the right sponsor that you can serve. But there is value. I will say there is value in coming up with like what I call in the book, your hell yeah number, right? What is it? What is your heck yeah number? Meaning like, what's the number that like gets you out of bed, gets you excited, regardless of how many followers you have or the reach or whatever it is. What's the number that you would get excited about if the brand proceed, like move forward with that? And so my best advice in these scenarios is like, let's say you're on a discovery call with the brand, just like your web design client, you know, clients that you teach, right? You're on a call with a prospective client, you're scoping out what they want. And then what does the client do? Oftentimes they say, okay, Josh, so how much is it going to cost me? Just ballpark, like, you know, tell me roughly, like, what's this website going to cost me to build? And what you should not do, and this is what I tell people, is you don't say anything. You say, well, thank you so much. This was very useful. You know what, I'm going to go back and I need to think through this. I need to talk with my team. I need to blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to get back to you with a custom proposal. And usually what I do in these proposals is I put together 3 to 4 different packages for how I could bring your website to life or how I could bring this, you know, partnership to life, right? Do you have a sense, brand, of what I should set those 3 to 4 tiers at from a budget feasibility perspective?
Interesting. You shut up. So you give them a little...
You shut up. I ask them about a budget range, not a budget. This distinction is important because if you ask them, hey, what's your budget? They're going to be like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I've never done this before. Never read on our website. Never, you know, I'm trying to speak your language, right? That's not useful information because the reason they don't want to tell you 10K as their budget is because what's your proposal going to be then? 10K, right? And they want to see if they can get a bargain, right? And so by asking about a budget range, though, you're now allowing them some flexibility. They're able to say 5, 10, 15K or 50, 100, 150K or $100, $200, $300. And now you know, okay, I'm not going to spend much time on this proposal, right? And so the reason that the budget range question is so important to ask is that 75% of the time when you ask this, I've done this across hundreds of negotiations, 75% of the time they'll tell you the range. It's crazy, dude. They'll actually tell you. And then 25% of the time, they're still going to stonewall. I don't know. We've never done this before. You tell us. You're the expert. And so that's where the heck yeah number comes into play. You say, okay, I'm still going to give them packages, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But package one is going to be my heck yeah number. And then if they move forward with you, you'll still be happy.
What do you tell the 25%? Or what do you do in that situation?
What do you mean? What do I tell?
They're just like, I don't know. You tell me, how much does this go for?
Well, that's what I'm saying is that's what your heck yeah number should. That's where you got to pick your number. You got to figure out like you package one is your heck yeah number because they're not going to the client is not going to tell you what their budget is.
Gotcha.
And so if it's 7,500, if it's 10 grand, if it's 2 grand, like whatever the number is, you just got to be satisfied if they pick that package.
So I think heading into the idea of sponsorships, because I'm busy enough right now and because it's not a necessary wing of revenue for me, I've really gone into it with the idea of some sort of productized sponsor offer to make it like, here's what I have open. Do you want it? But you are challenging me with the very idea of like the proven, I mean, you're in this world, you've been coaching a lot of people for a long time. I trust you when you say you're going to make 10x more without fixed pricing, without a productized model. So that's interesting.
Think about anytime anyone's ever tried to sell you something, bro. If anyone has ever tried to sell you something that feels slightly complicated, a bit overwhelming, and it feels like, here, man, here's the boilerplate thing I offer to everyone. You kind of get the ick, right? It's like, oh, okay, I'm just like another number and another number of this client. But when you feel like they take time, they listen to you, they learn about your challenges, and then they come back and page one of the proposal says, here's what I heard from our conversation, Josh. They said, you're having this issue, you're having that issue, you're having that issue. And then they go to the next page with the packages and they say, guess what? Package one is going to address pain point one that you just described to me. Package two is going to address pain point two. Package three, pain point three. And guess what? Package four addresses all your pain points. You're going to go with the top package, Josh, because you want your pain to go away. And so this is the exact same philosophy when you design sponsor proposals and you can help them accomplish those goals.
Yeah, I get that. It makes sense. I mean, I'm even thinking practically, like we just signed up for Moo Moo Car Wash finally. I was like, all right, it's winter time in the Midwest. I got it. You know, we're going to do that. But that's a very easily productized service because it doesn't change. Yep. You have like, there's literal packages depending on the tech that Correct. They have there. Whereas yep. when we got our patio done, yeah, I wouldn't have been interested in like package one that has up to this. It's like, well, what if I wanted to do this? I want to customize it, which is what a lot of creative services do. So I get that. That makes sense.
I think yeah. Your point is great, which is that there's shades of gray with respect to this. Yeah, there's certain businesses and services that can be, it's kind of almost like a production line. It's like a very, very standardized service. And it really would not make sense for them to offer anything bespoke. But a sponsorship is not like that. You have a lot of different distribution channels in your business, right? You've got newsletter, community, podcasts, YouTube, in-person events. Like, you know, you can't have a prefix menu. Yeah. Like it's not going to help the brand accomplish their objectives.
You know what it is? Here it is, Justin. I have an affiliate partner, a good friend of mine who has literally made over $2 million with a productized web design service. Exact same pages, very same structure. It is just the same tools. But here's the key. He serves one niche. He doesn't serve different niches with that same template. And I think that's the difference here is I'm thinking, or up to this point, I've thought about sponsorships as a productized offer, whereas every one of the tools that I use and the brands I've worked with, like you said, to this point, they all have kind of different values and different budget ranges and different ideas. So I can't create a sponsor product that fits well for all the different companies. And they're very different companies too. A hosting company is very different than a CRM, and it's different than a WordPress tool, and it's different than any other potential sponsor I might take on. So that's my
I'll correct
moment.
You. That's my I'll correct
moment.
You there.
Okay.
I'll correct you there, which is that you can create the sponsor package. It's just not going to go very well. Yeah. It'll go okay. You'll make some money, but then you'll wonder why they're not rebooking. You'll wonder why does every deal I do feel like a one-off transaction? Why are these brands not hiring me every single month?
Let's talk about the idea of rebooking and making this more of a recurring revenue type of thing. It's obviously not passive revenue by any means, but it is something that isn't a one and done if it goes right. So How long are typical campaigns? Is it typical to be a 30 day, a 90 day? I explored like some year-long brand partnerships deals and it did not go well. They were actually much more interested in tighter campaigns. Even repeat partners with tools that I trust and use, they were like, I really appreciate the idea of a year campaign, but we're not ready to commit to that right now. But this 30-day thing in this window sounds great. So what's the duration of typical sponsorships?
So it depends on the sponsor, I would say, of course. But the reason, there's a lot of different ways we could go down, dice up this question, but let me quickly explain why the brand didn't want to go for the 1 year thing. Two main reasons. One, first of all, if they've never worked with you or never worked with a creator, the prospect of doing a long-term engagement is terrifying because they've been burned before. They've worked with someone, it was a nightmare scenario, and they're like, oh God, we got to work with this person for 11 more months. Gag me with a spoon, right? So that's the reason why, very scary to do a long-term deal. The other reason that brands often want to do shorter, what are called flights, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, is because that is how they are being judged internally. Mm. Their KPI for their job or their role is usually on a monthly or quarterly basis. So they have some sort of metric of leads driven or sales or, you know, whatever the outcome is, awareness, like, you know. And so having a longer flight with you or having a longer duration makes it more challenging for them to report back to their superiors that, hey, this investment with Josh is worthwhile because look at the you know, results. The other reason could be just frankly that there's some sort of seasonal component to the promotion. It's a Black Friday thing, or it's a feature that's an AI feature that's launching that there's going to be a bunch of fanfare around for 60 days or whatever. And they want it to be tight. The other reason also could be that there's other media at play. So maybe they're doing, you know, banner ads on websites. They're doing billboards and bus benches out of home. They're doing TrueView on YouTube, pre-roll ads. They're doing print magazine ads. Like, it's, you might think this is crazy, but like some of these companies who have lots and lots of money, they are multimodal. They're doing marketing in a lot of different places. And so this flight that they're running the spot with you has to align with their larger marketing strategy. And so I know it can be frustrating that like, man, I wish this brand would just like hire me over and over. And like, why can't they just like sign a recurring deal with me? But this is why sometimes. I will say that more and more brands are getting savvier with what I call an always on approach to partnerships and influencer marketing, where just every month they've got 10, 20, 50, 100 partners that they're working with, activating content, you know, newsletters, podcasts, YouTube, et cetera. And those brands really but again, those brands, usually influencer marketing is like 50% of their marketing strategy. And so I really think it just kind of depends on the brand.
Gotcha. What about overlapping sponsorship campaigns with brands? That's one thing I was fearful of, is like, from just the administrative side, I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to keep track of all this stuff, but also like, I don't want to have one brand on my podcast, one on my newsletter, one on YouTube. And I know for some businesses that's fine, but because I run my businesses still primarily a solopreneur with a small team, sorry, I didn't answer your question earlier, but it is a very, very small team behind me of just subcontractors. Mm-hmm. So, I just felt like I would personally rather one sponsor 1 month or a handful of sponsors throughout the year that take up those months, essentially.
So it's more of a question of operational complexity, or were there other fears?
That's most of it, operational complexity.
That's a wussy excuse. I think enough. That's like, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, I bet you could onboard 3 clients a month and it wouldn't be that big of a headache, as long as you like design the offers in such a way that it was like fairly low lift, or bring on a part-time VA that the sponsorships that you should be able to land will more than pay for their ad ops, which is what this role is called. It's ad operations, for them to handle a lot of these logistics. Mm-hmm. The coupon, you know, the tracking links that they want you to use and which date it's going to go on. And like, all these details are like, yeah, I get it. It's like, yeah, that's like more complicated than just having one for simplicity's sake. But if I told you could make 100,000 instead of 10,000, would you do it? Like, I probably, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So in these flights, I like this
idea. By the way, I did not start this podcast planning on calling you a wuss, but it just came out.
That's going to be the intro. That's going to be the intro snippet for sure. No, I get it. I get it. I mean, look, I mean, I'm in a coaching role too. I see people not make excuses, but just have an apprehension. And I'm like, don't even worry about that. Like, no, I get it. It makes sense. But I think it's interesting because, you know, I mentioned our mutual friend, Jay Klaus. I'm pretty close with him, and I've seen his sponsorship strategy change to like really only accepting sponsors of tools that he uses. He wants to do less of that. And that was my thought from the get go. And it still is my interest. Like, I'm not really interested in working with like tons and tons of brands, but the tools that I use are an easy one because I know it. I use it. I fully back it myself. The next level from that are tools that either my team or my colleagues or my members know and use. And I see, and I'm like, okay, I would trust that to enter my world. Tell me about that real quick, Justin, about like basically I guess one fear I have, and I'm sure this is not uncommon for people entering sponsorships, is like, do I trust them enough to put them in front of my audience? And is it going to burn them? And am I going to look bad, or is it going to be a reflection on me?
Yeah, it's a great point, which is why the due diligence process is so important when you're vetting prospective sponsors. Obviously, reputational vetting is one thing. Like, it has this brand, you know, been embroiled in PR crises on the internet. Yeah, maybe that's not a brand that you want to, you know, align yourself with. But it even goes a bit deeper from a technical standpoint. And I think this is probably even more important for your audience, Josh, which is that, what is the user experience, the customer journey when someone decides to invest in this tool? Is it good? Have you actually gone through the signup flow? Let me go through it. Like, what does it look like? Can I redeem the coupon code? Is the landing page that I'm sending people to, is it make sense? Like, is there any gotchas? Like, it's a promo, but then you have to sign up for a year or like whatever. Like, you actually do this due diligence process to say, like, you tell the brand, like, okay, what's the offer going to be? Tell me what the offer is. Show me the landing page. I want to go through this and like understand it as if I was one of my audience members signing up for this tool, because what's going to happen if there's some sort of gotcha or technical snafu? Who are they going to get mad at, Josh? Right. They're going to get mad at you, not the brand. They're going to get mad at you. And so part of this process is like actually being able to say with your full chest, like, no, I stand behind this. I looked through it. I vetted it. I onboarded it. And in fact, I went to the brand and said, hey, you should change the copy here. You should change the button. And in fact, I did this with a financial services sponsor that I was working with. They sent me the landing page and I was like, this landing page sucks. There's no way I'm sending people to this. Here's what needs to change about this page before I agree to do this sponsorship. I'm actually going to film a 5-minute video that I put above the fold talking about why Justin Moore loves this tool. Boom, boom, boom. By the way, I was not contractually obligated to do this video.
That's cool.
But I said, this needs to be on the landing page because your product is awesome, but this page sucks. People won't understand why this tool is so cool. Let me do like a walkthrough. Let me share my screen. I'm going to show how I use it. Let's change the copy on this button so it's like clear what the offer is. And they were blown away, dude, because they were like, they couldn't believe that I was willing to do all this extra work. But dude, why wouldn't I? Because what's going to happen? Conversions are going to increase, right? And they're going to want to hire me.
I was going to say retention with that client too.
Yeah, and they're going to they're going to want to retain me as not just another creator partner. It's like almost like a consultant, someone who's taking it upon their own volition to give them advice on how to improve conversions. And so, this same philosophy, you know, your original question around like how can I feel comfortable representing a tool or suggesting a tool to my audience and maybe getting burned, a lot of it comes down to doing this legwork to feel comfortable that you did everything you could to ensure that you know, you were doing right by your audience.
And I will say, when years ago I was, other than doing affiliate link and having that extra source of revenue, I just wasn't interested in sponsorships. I think because I was just focused on building my business and focused on my assets. But I do remember vividly one of the conversations you had on Jay's podcast, Creator Science, was you talked about the value of having different reliable revenue streams, especially when there's market fluctuations. And like, if this dips, you have another wing of the business that you can turn on and ramp up. And I just want to tell you publicly, that is probably the single line I heard that was like, that's interesting. Because I have had dips in business to where I've never had a catastrophic change or anything dip, but the idea of like, if Web Designer Pro, for example, for whatever reason, if it dropped in revenue, I don't want that to be my only revenue stream. So I just want to say publicly, that is probably what piqued my interest to this. Do you help people with that idea too? With just
100%, dude, because it's not just about, you know, changing revenue streams and macroeconomic stability and all that, but like dude, AI is like going to be a seismic shift in like virtually every industry. For your, I'm sure this is a conversation topic amongst your people too, right? Which is like, if people can go to Lovable or any of these tools and make a website in a day, like what is that going to mean for my livelihood or my business, right? And so like, these things are going to happen that are going to disrupt how you've been doing things in your business. And my philosophy about the diversified revenue stream angle, Josh, is like, dude, when I quit my job in 2014, I was in medical devices before this, in engineering, and everyone, my friends, my family, they were like, "This is so risky. Like, you don't have the health insurance. Like, maybe you should wait till it's like more stable." I had just had a kid, and everyone thought I was like nuts with this decision. But the way I always looked at it was like, "Look, in my 9-to-5 job, I have one revenue stream, and if they decide to fire me, my one revenue stream goes to zero. But in a creator business, especially, my wife and I have like 11 revenue streams, right? And it's actually even more, because like, if you looked at the sponsor revenue stream, it's diversified about across a ton of sponsors, right? And so I always looked at this idea about, I like sponsorships for that particular reason, because it's not just one revenue stream. It's like, especially if you have, you know, 10, 20, 30 sponsors, like you can diversify your risk across all of them as well. And so for sure, I do think that this is like an important aspect. But again, this all has to play backseat to what I talked about at the very beginning, which is like, it's got to serve them. Mm-hmm. So whatever the revenue stream is, sponsorships, products, alliances, whatever it is, we have to make sure that it's serving our audience or our customers. And if so, then it makes sense to invest further in that revenue.
For sure. No, that all makes total sense. And I'm really, through this conversation, I'm still drawing a pretty big line between like affiliate revenue that is ongoing and then one-off sponsorship campaigns or flights. Mm-hmm. Again, one company could be dipping in and out of sponsorships, I imagine, but I was focused on recurring revenue with affiliate links for the longest time. But to your point, like there are, I guess I undervalued until the past year or so, where I'm getting so many inbound inquiries about sponsorships that like, no, people, even though I have a modest size audience, they're audience of buyers. And I think for web designers who may be thinking about this, it's like, maybe you have 50 people, but if 50 clients are like, you know, they're spending tens of thousands of dollars with you, they'll probably spend more on another product or something that you is, like you said, of service and is trusted.
100% right, dude. And I'm glad that you had that aha moment. And the other thing, I'll even push this further, which is like, okay, now that I know this, what would it take for me to go and pull up the top 10 affiliates that I have right now and go pitch them on a sponsorship? Like, yeah, I'm making recurring revenue from talking about your product, but like, hey, let's double down on this. Like, let me make some ongoing content for you. You have that feature coming out? Awesome. Let me create some reels that you can repurpose on your Instagram, or you can use for paid advertising. I don't even need to post this anywhere on my platforms. Just use it for paid advertising. So there's all these ways in which you can make a lot of money by doubling down on the relationships that you already have as well.
I can't believe we are at 10 minutes here. So I know we'll keep it under an hour, but a quick question I have is, I think about sponsorships, I think about newsletter placements, podcasts, both pre and mid-roll, podcast interviews. Like, side note, Justin's not paying to be on the podcast, and he's not paying for me to recommend Sponsor Magnet. This is purely
Josh said, "Hey, Justin, you want to come on the podcast? It's $500. And right? I gave him the middle finger, and he said, "Okay, you can come anyway."
All right, fine. Don't call me a wolf. Oh, dang it. We've got those trainings, like come to my audience, do a guest training for a certain amount, event sponsorships, and then YouTube placements, and then content created on social media, reels, et cetera. Any other types of sponsorship?
Dude, my, my, right?
you know?
My favorite thing, my favorite answer to this question is just like, dude, you can invent things that you don't even have yet.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was on a call with a sponsor and they, I was asking them about their goals and, you know, what their challenges are and their current strategy. And they basically said, you know, we've sponsored a lot of newsletters recently, but after the newsletter goes out, it just feels like it kind of disappears into the ether. And that's kind of a bummer. They just kept saying this over and over on the call. I said, okay, I just wrote it down. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get back to you with the proposal. And so, you know what I did, dude? I created a new section of my website called Partners. I mocked it up with their logo, their campaign messaging. I password protected it and I put it in the proposal. I said, hey, guess what? Remember how you were mentioning that you didn't like things disappearing into the ether? I have this new permanent section on my site now called Partners. And the whole duration that we're going to be collaborating, you're going to be there front and center, prominent, that you are aligned with my company. And they said, where do we sign? And that was never something I had in my business before, but it's a very low lift for me, but very high value to them. And so that philosophy, I think, can be applied to a lot of things, regardless of what type of business you have, is like, what is something that I can do for them that gets this deal across the finish line?
I'll tell you, mine is going to be my secret one that I'm going to be launching here as an offer is for my, like, somebody joins my email list, they're going to get a new, like, Josh's toolkit. And
cool.
Boom. That way it's not a one and done thing. It's ongoing, depending on how many people are signing up. So just another thing I'm thinking. I was trying to think, what, like, is there any other glaring gaps of like what could be a sponsorship opportunity?
You know? Well, I mean, the other obvious one that you didn't really discuss is doing content and webinars for them, for their audience. So yeah, you've built up your distribution channel, but like they would probably highly value being able to send a blast to their 100,000 customers and being like, guess what? We got Josh Hall coming in and doing a training on XYZ, you know, on this day, come here and register. A lot of people don't think about that as a sponsorship, but it is. And this also can be married with other promotion that you do on your platforms as well. So don't be shy to invent deliverables where the main destination for the integration is actually on the brand's platforms.
That is a great reminder. Cause when I do think about doing something for someone else, I think about it being a play for me, basically. Like I think about it being a net positive for me, but like I was just speaking at the Circle Summit, I realize, yes, I took time to create a presentation and do the workshop and promote it on my end, but also it makes them look awesome because I'm essentially a case study for Circle. So it is very reciprocal. It's a good reminder that doing a workshop for a partner is just as valuable. I like that.
Yep. Yeah. And by the way, they're so sick and tired of talking about themselves all day long. Oh, we got this new feature. We got this new benefit. They're so sick of that. And their customers are sick of it. But you doing a webinar, talking about you as a case study, that's awesome. Let me, how much do I need to pay for you to do that?
Yeah. Well, Justin, thanks for your time. And one final question. Tell us about where folks should go. The book is called Sponsor Magnet. It's a shame you're not a realtor because I feel like the name Justin Moore. Get more with Justin Moore. But sponsorship, you could use that angle too. I know you're into the dad funds as well. So
yeah, that was a great one for sure, man.
Where some folks go?
Yes. Dude, first of all, thank you so much for having me, man. This was such a blast. Sponsormagnet.com is the best place to go to grab it. You can get it in paperback, ebook, audiobook now format, which is fun. And yeah, man, I just cracked 5,000 copies sold. So,
congrats,
you know, definitely. Thanks, man. I'm doing whatever the heck I can to get this book in more folks' hands. And so, yeah, I mean, we really just kind of scratched the surface today over like what I talk about in the book. And so yeah, I'd really encourage anyone interested to go check it out. Sponsormagnet.com.
Final question for you. I want to give you the floor. Do you have a motivational minute to end us? Do you have a question for me? What's the final word from Justin on sponsorships?
Okay. Well, if I do a motivational minute, you need to put some inspirational music, piano track or something behind this in the edit. Okay. So make sure to make that note. All right, here we go. If you're listening or watching and you're sitting here thinking, I don't have a large audience, why would a brand, a company ever want to sponsor me? Just remember that you are valuable. You have influence. Maybe it's not influence on a global scale. Maybe it's influence in your local community. But you absolutely can serve a brand, a company, a corporate partner in very unique ways. So go a little bit further. Sponsorships are for you.
Awesome. Is my music coming through?
Dude, that was great. I feel the vibe. Perfect.
Okay. I couldn't tell how, I can't hear it. I didn't know how loud it was. So there we go. Justin, thanks, man. Been a blast. Great to finally connect, and excited for the next one. We got lots of talking to do here in the near future. So
thanks again, man.
First and last. Cheers, man.
So that's a wrap on my coaching call with Josh. If you want this kind of personalized sponsorship coaching for your own deals, join us inside Wizards Guild at wizardsguild.com. You'll get live coaching calls twice a month, plus support every Tuesday and Thursday. And unlike managers or agents, we take 0% of your sponsorship revenue. You keep everything you earn. So head to wizardsguild.com to join us now.